The following RBN program is totally awesome and 100% accurate, and any rebroadcast, retransmission, or account of this program without the express written consent of Republic Broadcasting Network or National Bugle Radio is strictly prohibited. Okay, bring it up there, Mr. T. Bring it up. Up, up, up. All right, that's enough. Okay, yep, there we go. A lot of people don't understand the awesome responsibility it is to create a show like this every single day. The literal army of people that work on it to bring you this day after day, National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's a huge amount. And so go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send some money. Also, download that Coast Certified app. I say it all the time. You know the routine. Go to nationalbugle.com. And you'll see the link. Download that Coast Certified app. Okay, so, you know, being an awesome radio host of an awesome radio show day after day, you know, on national, not just national, worldwide broadcast over the internet, even into outer space, we do get some mail. We get actually a lot of mail. Jeremy goes through the mail. He got an interesting piece of mail recently, and this must have been in response to a call about 2 weeks ago. I think I got a call from a Sanford in Florida who was asking why Jeremy and I were like wanting to Holocaust the Jews or whatever. Which, of course, I don't know. I mean, I tell you what. Let us have Jeremy, he read this out on his show last night. I'm just going to play that for you right now. So just, here we go.
All right, I'm going to read this email from Sanford. Hi, Patrick and Jeremy. Maybe I misunderstood you guys, but I was just on a Zoom-type conference call with a group taking a trip to Cambodia and Vietnam. When they were talking about visiting temples, I asked if they had Christian and Jewish temples there too. I was informed that yes, indeed, there were Jewish and Christian temples. This means that Judaism is not a race. At least I think this proves my point, unless I am missing something else about what you guys were talking about. Oh, I also asked if these people looked like me or looked Asian. I was told that the parishioners would most likely look Asian in the Jewish and Christian temples. I didn't ask about any evil Jewish people there. Good call. And I would imagine that since part of the trip takes you to Ho City, there might be a different perspective on all of us Americans than the general righteous one that we have. The term chosen, quote unquote, it seems to me, is supposed to be reserved to Jewish people. I guess you're saying chosen to become evil? I don't exactly know what you're saying. I always thought chosen was a positive adjective. I'm not trying to pick a fight with you guys. I find you speak quite differently than other hosts on the radio. I wanted to dig a little to find out more because the way you guys talk reminds me of Germany when our country was at war with them, Sanford and Florida. Based.
Okay, so, Jews, are they a race? So Sanford from Florida was pondering that question as he was literally planning his holiday in Cambodia.
Holiday in Cambodia,
All right. So in case you didn't know, that was a holiday in Cambodia. I thought that would be appropriate to play in the background of Sanford's letter. If I played Hava Nagila, that would be just like all racist and stuff. But, okay, so let's respond to this. Jews being a race, it's, well, there are temples there, Jewish temples in Cambodia, and so somehow that, so it's a religion. Well, okay, Judaism is a religion, right? What kind of religion is it? Well, I would call it the tribal religion of Jews. Then what does that make Jews? Well, I tend to call them a tribe. Now, here's the thing. So you've got this tribal religion that dates way, way back. Obviously, you know, the book, the Old Testament was written down 2,600 years ago or whatever from an oral tradition that very easily went back another 1,000 years. So it's this old tribal religion. The Jews, tribe, well, and how are they defined? Well, I mean, it's a little bit amorphous. It's a little bit hard to have, like, a really set definition. But there is a genetic component to it, absolutely. And if you were to look at, the Ashkenazi Jews. Now, most of the Jews in America, the vast majority in America, and the majority in the world, are Ashkenazi Jews. And interestingly enough, you know, within the past 1,000 years, maybe 800 years ago or so, the Ashkenazi Jewish population went through this severe bottleneck where you had very few numbers of people. In fact, I just saw something yesterday from the, I think it was the, unfortunately I didn't keep that window open on my phone, I don't have time to go back for it, but I believe it was from the National Institute, well, something from the National Institute of Health. And it was talking about all these Jewish genetic disorders. Tay-Sachs is the most famous. You can Google, I'll let you do your own work, but you can Google Tay-Sachs disease, genetic Jewish Ashkenazi genetic disorders. And you'll see there's like 20 genetic disorders that are associated with Ashkenazi Jews that are very rare amongst people who are not Ashkenazi Jews. Well, why is this? Well, so within the past 1,000 years, there was this severe bottleneck. The population from which today's many millions of Ashkenazi Jews descend, are they 10 million? I mean, Israel's Jewish population is about half Ashkenazi. America's Jewish population is almost entirely Ashkenazi. And, you know, I mean, there are Sephardic Jews, there are Mizrahi Jews here and there. Europe's Jews are mostly going to be Ashkenazi. So you're talking, what? Are you talking about 10, 12 million? I don't know, whatever it is. But they are descended from a very small number of people. Okay, let's... so you've got... there's another study that was done, relatively early on when they were analyzing mitochondrial DNA, which shows that about 40% of today's Ashkenazi Jews, about 40%, are descended on their matrilineal line. They are descended, you know, their mothers, 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 to four individuals. There are four women who lived maybe 1,000 years ago who are the direct mothers, 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 mothers of 40% of the world's Ashkenazi Jewish population today. Was it 23andMe? Or Ancestry.com. I think Ancestry.com, their genetic division, because they do, like 23andMe, they do genetic testing too. They have a Jewish guy who is the head of that branch of Ancestry.com, and you'll have to Google. There simply isn't the time for me to dig up all this stuff and give you the exact references, but you can find it. He wrote a little article about how, you know, Ancestry.com, when you send your DNA off and it comes back and tells you that you're, you know, 0.1% Bushman and 0.3% Aborigine and this and that, that they also tell you that you, if you've got cousins, they've got, you know, some sort of cousin detector. If you've got cousins around the country, they'll identify your cousins, I guess, especially in your part of the country. But there's a problem, because with Jews, it seems, and this is his words, not mine, it seems like, you know, half the Jews are your cousins. And when they're talking about cousins, they're usually not talking about first cousins, more like third cousins. And the thing is, even though Jews aren't literal third cousins of each other, third or fourth cousins of each other, because the Ashkenazi Jews descend from such a small number of individuals. So, I mean, you had those four very successful maternal ancestors, but, I mean, it's usually thought that there was, you know, somewhere between, 700 to 1,000 Jews, you know, who are the ancestors of today's Ashkenazi. So you went through this severe bottleneck where you're probably under 1,000 individuals, and then they provided the genetic material for all today's Jews. And, you know, one thing that happens is you get, when you go through a genetic bottleneck, you get what's called gene drift, because there will be some random genes that become very plentiful just by chance, and some random, because we're talking, there's a whole bunch of genes in the body, and then there's some random genes that become very unplentiful, that become rare or non-existent just because. I mean, you can imagine if you had 100 families on a 100 families on a an island, and you left them alone for 200 years, and you came back 200 years later. And let's just say all the men had different family names, and then you came back. Would you expect to find all 100 family names, or, you know, 50 if you're 100 people, 50 are men? Would you expect to find all 50 family names in the exact same proportion? And no, you wouldn't. Even if there was no natural selection going on, you would just find, even if it was, everything was like really pretty random, if all the babies and all the marriages were conducted purely by lottery, and everything was purely by random and survival, you know, you would expect to find that many of the family names had gone extinct, because there would have been fathers who didn't have sons. And you would find that many of the family names, even if everything was completely at random and it has nothing to do with genetic fitness or anything, you would expect to find some of the family names that had become very plentiful just because of random chance. And so you've got these 20 diseases, and you know, sometimes you'll have genetic diseases that and this often happens, that, like sickle cell anemia, which somebody has one gene from one parent that's sickle cell, but the other one is normal, it actually provides some sort of benefit. In the case of sickle cell, it provides some sort of strength against malaria. But if you get both genes, then you have a severe case of anemia and are not likely to survive. So, but, you know, when you just have the one gene, it provides a survival benefit. And, you know, some of the genetic disorders like Tay-Sachs, there may be some of that going on, but to a large extent, it can just be random. I mean, because everybody's got some bad genes. But the thing is, if it's a rare bad gene, you're randomly assigned mate in a big population, or whoever you breed with in a big population, is not likely to have that rare gene because it's rare. And so if the normal gene is dominant and the rare gene is recessive, then you never find the trait. And that's usually how it works. And that's the problem with inbreeding, because when you inbreed, when you have babies with a close relative, the odds of them having that exact, because you share a lot of genes in the same places, and so the chances of those bad genes coming from both parents to the child are greatly enhanced. Okay, so anyway, the Ashkenazi Jews are a very definable, very easily definable genetic group. If you look at Ashkenazi Jews, there's been very little inflow. There's obviously been a lot of outflow, because we're always talking about people who are half Jewish or a quarter Jewish. And so historically, not so much in the past 100 years, but historically, there has, when a Jew, an Ashkenazi Jew in particular, but a Jew and a non-Jew mate and reproduce, the offspring are not, they do not stay in that Ashkenazi community and in their gene pool. They're typically expelled. Typically, that's how it was. Recently, it's not how it is. And so you are getting, I mean, you look at, say, the Chabad-Lubavitch movement, and they'll go around, and if your mother's mother was Jewish but your other three grandparents weren't, they still will welcome you. To them, that's just water under the bridge. They'll still welcome you. But anyway, for most of the, say, the 900 years or 1,000 years of this Ashkenazi gene pool, for the most part, mixed people, people of mixed lineage went outside. They reproduced outside of the gene pool and not inside. So you have this very distinct gene pool. Now, Sanford was saying, is that a race? Well, you see, what does race even mean? And it means different things in different contexts. But in the context of the United States that Sanford and I grew up in, race was implicitly understood by people to mean these very, very large groupings of people. And in the context of the United States, you had whites, you had blacks, and you had a few Orientals, not a whole lot. Now there's a lot more. So it was white, blacks, and Orientals, white, blacks, and Asians. Now, I mean, you can say, well, then where do the Aborigines fit in, or where do the South Indians fit in, or you can say stuff like that. But the culture we grew up in, whites, blacks, Orientals, there was the three races, and clearly Jews would fit inside the what would be the white race then. But still, okay, we're coming up on the break. There's a lot to talk about, even if you're going to say Jews are part of that big white race. And we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, we are back. So, getting back to all this genetic stuff, Jewish genetic stuff. So, they are a very distinct gene pool. Now, you could say they are within the white, the greater white race. I mean, if you're going to, like race, there are a lot of definitional issues here. There's something real about it. There is something real about oceans. Although sometimes defining where the Indian Ocean stops and the Atlantic Ocean begins or things like that, it can get blurry. And if you're talking about oceans, well, then where does the Gulf of Mexico fit in or whatever? I mean, there's all sorts of things you can have definitionally about these types of things. But if you're going to say there is a white race, includes Englishmen and does it include Persians? If it includes Englishmen and Persians and Turks and Arabs, how does it not include Jews? I mean, you can say that. But the thing about, the main thing about Jews is they act tribally. They are a tribe, and there is a group behavior. Of course, when you talk about group behavior, that doesn't mean all individuals in the group behave a given way. But as a group, they do. There is a group behavior. There is a group behavior amongst Jews to organize, to form organizations. In order to have a conference of presidents of 50 major Jewish organizations, Well, for one thing, you have to have 50 major Jewish organizations. And in order to have 50 major Jewish organizations, you have to have a whole bunch of organizations that aren't major, because otherwise it would just be the 50 Jewish organizations. But there's a lot more than that. You know, you look at that Conference of Presidents, J Street, which is a big Israel lobby. It is the left-wing Israel lobby. They want to get into the Council of Presidents. They can't because they're not major enough. But also, you know, is Goldman Sachs part of the council? No, they're not. They're not explicitly a Jewish organization. They're not explicitly a Jewish advocacy organization, but they're certainly part of the Jewish power structure. You know, Goldman Sachs. What about Walt Disney, which, you know, although Walt Disney was like a horrible anti-Semite, the Disney organization has for decades been run by Jews, and many would say that it has had kind of a Jewish agenda. Why do I always talk about Jews as being distinct from whites? It's because I'm a political scientist, and politically, regardless of genetically, whether the Ashkenazi gene pool, which is distinct and very identifiable, but whether or not that distinct gene pool can be subsumed within the great array, the great diversity of what is often called the white race, and I say it can be, obviously, but regardless of that, the group behavior of the Jewish tribe is very contrary to the interests of the group behavior of at least the European branch of whitedom. You know, maybe it's not contrary to the Arab branch of the white race or whatever. You know, you can make your argument pro or con there. Maybe it is. The Palestinians would say it is. But maybe you'd look at all the Arabs who have the Syrian refugees from Afghanistan who are in Europe, and you know, you can make the argument with it. Well, actually, Jewish power is good for them. But in terms of the main European branch of the white race, as it is either defined or largely viewed. The behavior, the actions of the Jewish tribe, the group behavior is very, very contrary to the group interests of white Europeans, which is why, as a political scientist, when I am looking at political phenomena, it makes no sense to. It doesn't just make no sense. Obfuscates phenomenon by not distinguishing between Jews and what I say non-Jewish whites. I usually will say non-Jewish whites. That's a term I typically use, especially when I'm trying to be precise. Non-Jewish whites. If I'm saying non-Jewish whites, it actually implies that Jews are white, but they are a distinct branch of the white race that actually sees the rest of the white race to a large extent as being alien and enemy. I'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Please view, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Stop Terrorism. Please contact us if you or anyone you know who wants to be on our show at thetruthpharmacy@gmail.com. Keep it real. Take the red pill.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Lopato ka misaki.
Welcome back to the show. So once again, I think this might be the second Friday show in 2 weeks where I've been addressing Sanford. It may well be. And this is why I kind of welcome the call. So, like I say, if the question is, are Jews a separate race? What I'm saying is they are a distinct gene pool. If the way race has commonly been thought of in the United States during my lifetime and Sanford's lifetime here in the United States, by the commonly understood definition of race, Jews are white. But as a political scientist, when I'm analyzing political or social phenomena, the only way to make sense of things is to distinguish between Jews and non-Jewish whites. So does that answer the question? At Judaism, the thing is, if you say Judaism doesn't equal Jews. Judaism is a religion. It is a very, very old religion. It has been historically the tribal religion of Jews. Now, there are other tribal religions here and there, but
I guess Zoroastrianism has been functioning as a tribal religion among the Parsis. Is that what they're called, the Parsis? Freddie Mercury was a Parsi. He's the only famous Parsi that most people would know about, Freddie Mercury from the rock band Queen. At any rate, it's a tribal religion. The big religions that we're accustomed to today, Christianity in America, Islam in many places, Buddhism and Hinduism, to a greater or lesser extent, is it correct to say evangelical religions, in that they seek members, they seek adherents. They're proselytizing. They're trying to get adherents. Whereas, biblical scholar, a woman from, I believe, Vanderbilt University, and her name slips my mind, but I listened to one of her courses on audio, and it was a course on the Old Testament, and over and over and over she would say, well, this is an example of, group categorization. I can't remember the exact term, but it was the Jews, so many aspects of the Old Testament were making Jews distinct. How about kosher food? These dietary restrictions, the kosher dietary restrictions, group distinction, to distinguish themselves from the others. We are going to eat this, and they're going to eat that. We're going to do things this way, and it keeps us separate. It keeps us distinct. So you had that. Whereas with Christianity and Islam and, at least certain forms of Buddhism and Hinduism, they are out to convince everybody, hey, this is the way, you come join us, for better or for worse. And you can make the case, especially if you're a Christian and you look at Muslims coming into the United States or into Europe with their religion and their plan to get everybody to abide by that religion, that can seem threatening. So for better or for worse, but I'm just trying to analyze the phenomena. I've been in the mosque, the big mosque, on Massachusetts Avenue, right by where Massachusetts Avenue in Washington D.C. it crosses over Rock Creek Park. I don't know if it's called the National Mosque or whatever it is, but right where it's right just before if you're going down Massachusetts Avenue. And you're headed like north or northwest or whatever it is. And just before you cross over the Rock Creek Parkway on your way out to, say, American University, on the right-hand side of the road, there's a big mosque. I've been in there. That's the only mosque. Well, actually, I've been in one other mosque, I guess. Well, no, I've been in other mosques overseas, but whatever. At any rate, you can go in there. And you take off your shoes, and you can go pray to Allah with all the Muslims. You can't bring your mom because she's got to go downstairs. my mom wasn't very happy about it either. But you have to go downstairs. It's right there on Embassy Row. The women have to go downstairs and pray separately. But anyway, you can go do that, and you go into a church, and everybody's welcome. And they want people to come and join. Now, I guess you could go to a Reform synagogue, and if you went to the Reform synagogue, which I have never been to a Saturday religious service at a Jewish temple. Okay, I have not. I have been to like special non-Saturday events. I remember when the Chabad Lubavitch in India, in Bombay, India, or Mumbai, as they call it nowadays, there had been some Pakistanis that went and shot up a bunch of places And one of them was a Chabad Lubavitch Center, the Chabad Lubavitch Center of Mumbai. It got shot up. This wasn't, strictly speaking, an anti-Semitic attack. It was an attack on a lot of targets in Mumbai, but that was one of them. And so they had some sort of special service, some sort of special memorial. And to what extent that was really qualifies as a religious service, I don't know, because I don't have anything to judge it by. I've been to events in synagogues, but anyway, I wound up being invited, along with a lot of other prominent people, to this service at a Chabad Lubavitch Center, and so I went. So I have been, but in general, I think if you were in Rockville, Maryland, and you go to one of those synagogues right along, I guess, is that New York Avenue or Connecticut Avenue? Maybe it's Connecticut Avenue where they have all those. Connecticut Avenue, headed into D.C. You're going through Silver Spring. Let's say, forget Rockville, let's say Silver Spring. And so if you head into one of those on a Saturday, given Saturday, which I haven't done, I've always wanted to. You'll probably be met with smiling faces, one of those reformed synagogues. But I tell you one thing, if you started going week after week after week, and let's just say you go with a whole bunch of people, let's say a whole bunch of black people, right? And then you act like you belong there. They're going to find a way to make you unwelcome. Don't you think so? I mean, I don't know, Sanford, if you go to temple on a weekly basis, but if you're down there in Florida, and all of a sudden you get like a bunch of Black Lives Matter people who just decide, hey, we're Jews. Let's just say the whole Black Lives Matter, because, you know, the woman, one of the three women who founded it, one of the three lesbian black women who founded it, had a Jewish stepfather and identified as a Jew. Well, what if the entire Black Lives Matter movement decided, you know something, that whole Christianity thing, that's all tied up with whiteness and the nuclear family. We're Jews. We're Jews. And what if the entire Black Lives Matter movement started going to synagogues? What would happen? Now, I can tell you, if they started going to Christian churches, well, they would be accepted, maybe begrudgingly, but I think. And maybe not in Jeremy's neighborhood so much. I don't know what would happen, but I think in Silver Spring, Maryland, if a bunch of Black Lives Matter people started going to week after week after week to a Presbyterian church, and they said they belonged there, the Presbyterians would say, "Yes, you do belong here." And if they started becoming deacons and taking over the church and radicalizing it, the Presbyterians would let it happen. The Jews wouldn't. And the right, Sanford? I mean, if you go to a, I don't know if you go to a Reform synagogue, if you go to synagogue at all, if you go to a conservative, I doubt you're Orthodox. Maybe you are Orthodox. Who knows? I can't see that. And tell me if I'm wrong. And especially an Orthodox, if you just started having outsiders go to an Orthodox synagogue, no, it's not gonna be permitted. So you have this, it's the religion itself, there is a religion. Now, if you were, I tell you one thing, if you were a quarter Jewish and you got your Jewish grandmother and you go to the Chabad Lubavitch Center, they're going to accept you. So anyway, it's tribal. There is a genetic component. It's not exclusively Jewish. And there are people like Sammy Davis Jr., a black guy, who converted to Judaism for whatever reason. I doubt he was Orthodox, but I have seen, I know that a black man from North Carolina, I think, and he married a woman who then became, and then the woman got interested in Chabad Lubavitch, and they, you know, they more or less accept this black man, the husband, who must have undergone the conversion. So it's not unthinkable. It's not impossible. But if it was, I tell you one thing, no synagogue of any stripe is going to let a bunch of outsiders come in and take over and change everything.
the way Christian churches have. And, you know, you look at these Christian churches, and whether it's been physical people who have come in and changed everything, or, you know, like huge numbers of physical people who come in and change everything, or small numbers, but then who bring an agenda. But you see how many Christian churches are, you know, even led by, say, lesbian ministers and are preaching homosexuality and all of this stuff. A lot. It's a lot. Okay, so we've kind of dwelled on that. Now, I guess at this point, I might as well make the whole show dedicated to Sanford. And this is, you know, this is one of the reasons I appreciated his call, because there's a lot of things that I'd like to say, I'd like to get on the record. And this is one of the problems with doing radio, is like if I was writing articles, it would be really easy for me to point to, when somebody accuses me of this or that, to point to, oh, this article, just read this article, you see what I said. I can't do that with shows very often, because, you know, the shows, we talk about a bunch of stuff, there's no written record, it's hard to search, and that's that. But here's Sanford, if he's been listening to this show, and you, my listeners, know that I'm very critical of Jewish power, the Jewish power structure. But if you've been listening to the show long enough, you've heard some shows like this one, where I then go on to say, but if you understand the way Jewish power works, you would understand why I don't feel vengeful. Now, you look at what's going on in the United States today, especially with the fake election, and you've got the fake Biden administration who have taken over the levers of power, and they are very vengeful, and they are going after white people, and there's the black. What Defense Secretary Austin is trying to purge the military of white supremacy. They are vengeful. They're going after people. They're getting them fired from their jobs. There are people who are being arrested. That guy who did the funny meme, I forgot his name, but he did the meme in 2016 about Hillary Clinton supporters are supposed to vote on Wednesday as opposed to Tuesday, or text their vote or whatever, who's been arrested. They're very vengeful. I'm not vengeful. And it's not that, and I'm not one of these people who say, well, it's only like a small number of Rothschilds or a small number of people who are responsible. Everybody else is fine. No, I think people like Sanford have a responsibility. And I want to say that I've been hearing my entire life how I, as a white person, have had privilege and are responsible for all of the bad things that have happened to blacks and Jews and foreigners and, you know, everybody. I've been hearing that, and I've got a thick skin, okay? I think people like Sanford who call up or leave or send email messages saying that what Jeremy and I say sounds an awful lot like what you heard in Germany during World War II, meaning the Holocaust. That Jeremy and I sound like the Holocaust, because that's what the implication is. When you're saying that, you're trying to stifle speech. And even when you're not saying it, when you've got an environment where lots of people are trying to stifle any criticism, you've got an environment where lots of people, Jews in particular, are trying to stifle any criticism of Jews. Somebody who, even if Sanford or somebody like Sanford's next door neighbor, wasn't saying, well, this sounds like Germany during the 1940s, even if he's not saying that, but just identifying publicly as a Jew in an environment where criticism of Jews is forbidden, somebody just identifying as a Jew, to say, well, you know, I'm Jewish. They're even playing a small part. Now, they're playing a small part in the censorship. How important is that? Well, I mean, it's important, but is it something that we need to take vengeance? And I say no, because the whole thing is, white people have it within their means to simply take control of the situation by not paying attention to CNN, by not putting their money into you know Goldman Sachs run funds, not hedge funds, but retirement funds or whatever, by boycotting, in particular, boycotting. This is the number one thing. If we start boycotting the places that are detrimental to us, we can take everything back. We don't have to punish anybody. And I, so I'm not talking about punishing anybody who hasn't explicitly broken an existing law, which is a very Putin-esque approach. But I am a Putinist, and I'll explain what that means on the other side of the break.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Okay, I am back. I hopefully explained before the break why I think people like Sanford have a certain responsibility for the problem of Jewish power, in that they passively, or in the case of Sanford and his call and his letter, actually actively are playing a role in the maintaining the taboo on the criticism of Jewish power. So I think there's a responsibility. But as a Putinist, I don't seek any kind of retribution or vengeance or punishment of people. I understand why it's happening. The punishment, the vengeance is not necessary. We have it within the means to take back the situation without retribution, without punishment, without violence. We have it within our means. Whether we'll ever do it or not, I have no idea. But we have it within our means. Boycotting, the number one thing would be boycotting. If we learn how to boycott, that's the day we get our society back. But what is a Putinist? Well, Vladimir Putin, who I think the humanity is very, very fortunate that we have Vladimir Putin. Putin was he was parachuted in as Prime Minister of Russia in the late days of the Yeltsin presidency by the Jewish power structure, who thought that they were going to save their oligarchy from the 2000 election, where they would once again be beaten by the outspoken and often anti-Semitically outspoken head of the Russian Communist Party, Gennady Zyuganov, who won the 1996 election. But if you want to know how that was stolen, how that election was faked and stolen by Yeltsin and his Jewish American advisors, watch the HBO movie Spinning Boris with Jeff Goldblum, starring Jeff Goldblum. Putin, they put Putin in place, but Putin turned around and he took back power to a very large extent for the Russian people, but without vengeance. Now the oligarchs who resisted him, some of them were driven into exile, some of them were put in prison, but the ones who accepted Putin's rule were allowed to keep their gains, which may have been ill-gotten, but were gotten legally under the rules that had been in place. And honestly, like a lot of people might say that I'm a shill or I'm not strong enough or whatever. The rules that have been in place here have been bad rules, but they have been the rules. And people who have gotten things legally, according to the rules, and that can even mean legal immigrants who came here under the 1965 immigration laws, that's water under the bridge as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there may be ways that some of them would decide that they'd rather live elsewhere, but as far as I'm concerned, that's water under the bridge. So those immigrants are water under the bridge. Jewish wealth is water under the bridge if it was acquired legally, but we have the means and ability to take back the situation. I hope that made things clear, and I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, domedan at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.